I had to laugh at how willingly everyone was like, sure, that's a good idea. Get inside this thing and we're going to take you by a helicopter across the damn country. And then, oh, Rodan attacks. Like, who thought this would be a good idea? Why did they let her in that thing?
Right. I think you even see one character like start to protest a little bit, and then another guy, like Azusa's boss, is like, no, let her do it. It's like, why? Why would you let her do that?
Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Podcast. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum
and Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time.
Traditional kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts welcome here.
Camp Kaiju is brought to you by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Whether you're looking for your dream home, a savvy investment property, or expert guidance in home rehab and flipping, the Zach Pack has you covered. Check the link in the show notes for more information.
あなたを守って見せるからね。ゴジラが来る。ベビーゴジラをめぐる史上最大のバトルが始まる。この子が呼び寄せたんでしょうか。
Matt, we're back. Season six. Here we go.
Season six, 2026. Happy New Year. I guess this will air probably mid-January, but Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to you, listeners. We're so excited to get this year underway here on Camp Kaiju. We are starting with a Godzilla movie tonight, but we have so many other movies lined up that I'm so jazzed for.
Same. Now I can't remember any of them. But I know the one that I'm bringing next episode, I think, is The Abominable Snowman is the short name of it. I think it has a longer name, but I'll just call it The Abominable Snowman for now. Again, a Hammer horror movie. I'm excited about that one. I know later on, some of the titles that I'm bringing are Children of the Corn, the Stephen King movie, Alucarda, a Mexican horror movie, At Midnight I Will Take Your Soul, a very good Brazilian horror movie. So I kind of wanted to do a little like global flavor this season, you know?
And I've got you right there with you. I've got Troll Hunter lined up, a Norwegian film. The Black Scorpion is an American film, but it's set in Mexico about a giant scorpion. Blackula, some Roger Corman-esque blaxploitation coming up very soon. So I think it's just like a smorgasbord, an eclectic little platter of finger foods here we got coming up.
Yeah, for sure. I love that analogy. I feel like we always try to keep it pretty eclectic, but like this might be our most diverse lineup yet, I would say.
Yeah, and I can't even say, like, I've stopped myself from saying, oh, we're featuring a lot of foreign films, because most of our movies are Japanese. Like, they're all foreign films.
Yeah.
But we're covering more of the globe this season.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to get real for just a quick second, because we are recording this on January 8th. And 2 days ago, the big news, tragic news, is that a woman was shot to death by ICE agents. And I, just speaking for myself here, as a producer on this show, I always have very big feelings around national matters of, you know, national importance and local and state matters, but I don't think this falls into a matter of simple politics. I think this is, like I said, a tragedy and a not just a bellwether, but a statement of our administration in Washington and what they're willing to do and who they're willing to do it to. And living here in Minneapolis, Matt, I just hope you're okay. Our listeners who are in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota, I hope you are okay. And anyone else out there affected by bad people, just with no care for human life, rights, and decency.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It's a scary, infuriating, sad time, certainly in Minneapolis and throughout the country. And I don't know, I, you know, just want to say that I've always loved Minneapolis and St. Paul for how diverse and eclectic it is. It's an amazing community. I've loved living here for 15 years now. And, you know, I just think it's important to say, you know, this might be like a silly monster podcast or whatever, but it's still important to say, like, you know, we support our neighbors. We support other people who live in Minneapolis. We feel for you. We, like you said, Vincent, we hope you're doing okay. If you don't mind, Vincent, I would like to just say a couple websites that are good resources for immigrant rights in Minneapolis and in the Minnesota community.
Please.
For anybody out there who's wondering what they can do, I know I've been wondering that the last couple days. Just some good resources in the Twin Cities include the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. That website is ilcm.org. Going through my list here a little bit, MIRAC, which is the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee. That's MIRAC, MIRACMN.com. International Institute of Minnesota, IIMN.org. The Advocates for Human Rights, which helps immigrants all throughout the Upper Midwest. That website is theadvocatesforhumanrights.org. And then the Immigration Advocates Network, that's a national service. Immigrationadvocates.org is the name of that website. One last one, Unidos, Minnesota. That's UNIDOS-MN.org. You know, those are all really great websites. If you go to any of those websites, maybe we can provide some links in the show notes or something. But, you know, a lot of really helpful information about how you can support your neighbors. Make sure that they're safe because, yeah, it's not a safe time to be, you know, to be an immigrant or even to be an ally right now, as was proven in Minneapolis yesterday. So yeah, I hope you're all doing okay. We support our neighbors again, and it's a tough time in Minnesota and in the country right now.
I want to say I don't know if any of my students listen to this podcast. If you do, fantastic. I just want to let you know that I have your back at any point in time. Listeners, I teach in Minneapolis public schools. And at one of these schools I taught at, I won't tell you which one, but an overwhelming majority of my students were of Somali, East African descent, or English language learners from Latin America. And these kids are the smartest, brightest, most hardworking students of the bunch. Ask them what they want to be. Entrepreneurs, businessmen, doctors, lawyers. I'm like, get it. Like, that's amazing. And just knowing like where you came from, like you moved, like your family moved to another country. That's so hard to do. And they've been through so much. They are tougher than I will ever be. And they don't deserve this. And they do deserve all of our support. So shout out to the students and kids in Minneapolis. Yeah. Bringing it back to monster movies. You know, Matt, and fans of cinema and horror movies and monster movies, we know that the creators behind some of the most impactful of those genre stories came from oppression. They speak out about injustice. I'm thinking about Ishiro Honda, his entire run of Godzilla films and kaiju films in the 60s. All espoused messages of not just peace, but like world unity. The United Nations isn't just like a dysfunctional body in his movies. They are what we can aspire to. I'm thinking about Star Trek too. Guillermo del Toro, watch Pan's Labyrinth as a really great critique on fascism. I mean, right? Like Name anybody, and they're making these movies using our favorite genre to tell these stories.
Absolutely. And I really love it on our podcast when we're able to kind of like dig into some of those political themes, because I think monster movies are such a good and powerful vehicle for that. You know, they seem kind of like fun sci-fi or horror movies on the surface, but you can talk about really complicated social things about, you know, xenophobia, oppression, like you said, Vincent, like so many complex and kind of dark themes can sort of subtly or not so subtly work their way into these monster movies. I also think about some of the mid-century American movies like The Day the Earth Stood Still or Them, where it's like, you know, metaphors for McCarthyism and how oppressive American society was at that time too. And, you know, I think we're in another period of American society where those themes of oppression, paranoia, you know, tyranny, dictatorship, as relevant as ever, if not more so. So this is an important time to have a podcast like this, just because like talking about monster movies is talking about the world, you know?
Talking about monster movies is talking about the world. I mean, you're right. And I don't, you know, people ask me, oh, like, what are your hobbies? I'm like, I have a monster movie podcast. But I do take it very seriously because, that's who we are. And we take our art seriously. So thank you, listeners, for being a part of it, for laughing with us, for thinking with us, for just caring and sharing your hearts with us.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah. In particular, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2.
Not the first one. Not Terror.
And not even a sequel to the first one, despite the name, which is very confusing.
Man. All right. Well, before we get to that, some quick nuts and bolts. Please rate and review this show wherever you are listening to us, dear followers. Support us on patreon.com/campkaiju for additional videos, reviews, merchandise, and more. Other ways you can get in touch, campkaiju@gmail.com, campkaijupodcast.com, Instagram, our voicemail number, 612-470-2612. Join the ranks of our patrons, Jason, Chris, Sean, Peggy, Dawn, and our new patron, Steffi. Thank you so much. And of course, our anonymous patron, who I'd love to hear from about the dubbing aspects of this particular film. But we're going to have a good conversation. We got some things coming up, Matt, some events. But first, I just wanted to ask, you had some recent writings, publications? Found Footage Magazine, is that right?
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, the newest issue of Found Footage Magazine came out probably about a month ago at this point. And it's a digital only, it's an online only version for this publication, but so much great writing. A publication that I'm really honored to write and edit for. I have a review of a movie called Another Other, which was one of my favorite films of 2025, a really incredible short experimental film. But there's so much other good stuff in the latest issue of Found Footage Magazine. So yeah, that website is foundfootagemagazine.com. Check it out.
Yeah, that's going to be in the show notes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I also want to let you know, the world, that on February 11th at the Black Heart Bar in St. Paul, right on University Avenue, there's going to be a Nerd Night event. Now, if you don't know what Nerd Night is, it's a loose organization around the country. But what it is you get the chance to present like a slideshow of whatever topic you want. You get 15, 20 minutes. The floor is yours. And you present to the room, to the crowd. And right now, what I'm slated to do, they chose me. I was like, fantastic. On behalf of Camp Kaiju, is a presentation about who would win in a fight, the thing or the blob.
I love this idea, man. I can't wait to see your presentation. I will be there and I'll be taking notes, let me tell you.
I hope so. And yeah, you all can get a beer. You can get some food. I've never done this before. I've never been to one, but I think it's going to be fun. So I got to do my research. I'm going to be focusing on the 80s films of those respective monsters. But I think I will throw in the 50s versions too, just for a wrinkle. So I don't know. Jury's out. Who's going to win? Listeners, let us know.
I love it. You're the expert on that. I feel like you are the ideal person to talk about that subject, you know?
I'm going to go deep.
Yeah.
Give me audio commentaries. Found Footage magazine has a article on either movie. I just need all the materials.
I'll dive into the archives. I don't know if they do, but yeah, you'll have tons of resources, I'm sure.
So that's February 11th in St. Paul, Minnesota. All right. This month in monster movie history, it's January. I'm always surprised by how many movies come out. Because like January, I'm like, movies don't come out in January. But over the course of a century, some movies do come out in January.
And I feel like some distribution companies put out horror movies in January because they don't think they're going to win any awards or like get very good reviews. And like some of them are amazing, you know, but they're not like prestige movies or whatever. So yeah. Sometimes yeah. the early in the year stuff can be the best stuff.
I see our favorite, The Relic, was released in January of 1997.
That's a fun one. I love talking about it.
Fun one. Tremors in 1990. Now, that was not expected to be as popular as it was.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that does kind of seem like a summer movie, you know? Maybe it's like the southern setting or whatever, southwest setting. But yeah, yeah. That's a little surprising. I really like the movie Pumpkinhead a lot. Lance Henriksen is in that movie. He's one of my favorite sort of like character actors who's often in sci-fi and horror stuff. He's in Aliens. He was on the show Millennium. Pumpkinhead is good. It's a little bit darker and more depressing than I thought it would be, but still weird, kind of fun in a way. Fun and depressing at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't love the movie Leprechaun, but I know that movie has a lot of fans out there.
One day I'll bring it to the pod to torture you.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you'll convert me to the other side on that one, but probably not. I mean, so probably the best movie on here, I think we've talked about it before, but Island of Lost Souls with Charles Laughton. Like, I think one of the first film adaptations of Island of Dr. Moreau. Really, really great movie.
Yeah.
Pre-code classic.
Pre-code horror. And later on this season, we have an H.G. Wells movie coming up. War of the Worlds.
Yep, the original War of the Worlds. I can't wait. Hopefully we'll talk about the Orson Welles radio show a little bit too.
I'm so excited. And the listeners, that reminds me, on Patreon, on patreon.com/campkaiju, I do share occasionally old-time radio shows that feature either monsters or science fiction or talent that is in the movies we talk about. For instance, I love anytime Peter Lorre is on the radio, and he's got so many horror credits to his name. So I'm going to be including those as well on our Patreon, exclusive just for our supporters there. So if that's any incentive to you all, we will share the Orson Welles infamous War of the Worlds on our Patreon.
Cool. I got to check out some of those other radio shows. That sounds fun.
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I went through a phase. When I was living alone like 10 years ago, just listening to old time radio stories.
Oh man, I'm like a cold, rainy night like tonight. That sounds perfect.
Yeah. All right. Did anyone see Anaconda last month with Jack Black and Paul Rudd? Cricket. Anyway.
Some people probably did. Not me, though. I did not.
I feel like it came and went.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it got kind of bad reviews. That seems like a movie I wouldn't mind like streaming at home at some point and like not expecting too much out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Probably the best way to see that movie.
Yeah. Well, what about 28 years later, The Bone Temple? I didn't even know this was coming out till today.
Yeah, I saw 28 years later last summer when that came out, and I thought it was pretty good. It's my least favorite of the 28 Days and Months Later series so far, but Ralph Fiennes is great. I'm excited for the new one. It looks pretty crazy. So I'll be there to see it for sure.
Sweet.
Yeah.
You let us know.
I will. Absolutely. One movie that I did see recently was Frankenstein, the Guillermo del Toro Netflix release that came out relatively recently. Yeah. I thought it was okay. I don't want to sound overly harsh. And I've been a little critical of Guillermo del Toro in the past, Pacific Rim, for example. So I don't want to sound too harsh. I feel like I don't know exactly what that adaptation adds to the novel Frankenstein, or even like the James Whale movies, you know, the original Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. So yeah, didn't love it, but I would love to hear other people's reactions and responses to that movie.
Yeah, me too. We just got Netflix again after so many years without it. So I will be seeing Frankenstein ASAP.
And that's pretty much your favorite story of all time, right?
Yeah, do you see, my aunt and uncle are so funny. They found at like Home Goods a giant bust of Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster.
I love that. That is beautiful, man.
It's just like, I opened it and I just laughed so hard with so much love because I'm like, what? Amazing.
That is truly the perfect gift for you.
All right. Coming up on Camp Kaiju, like we alluded to, we have The Abominable Snowman, Hammer Horror with Peter Cushing. I've been doing some research into this film. I am very hyped about it. It looks so low-key, black and white, just like a chiller.
Yeah, I've read that it's one of the more underrated Hammer Horror movies, and those are a little hit or miss for me, but the ones that I love, I really love. So I'm excited to watch it, for sure.
And listeners, just so you know, I don't know if this movie is streaming anywhere. Matt, maybe you know or not, but I did find it on YouTube, and I'll be sharing that on Patreon as well.
The Abominable Snowman, I think it's streaming somewhere, although I have to admit I haven't looked extremely recently, so yeah. I'll find out.
Yeah, just something to keep in mind, folks. But again, if you check out our Patreon, this one is free to the masses. Just go over to our Patreon and you'll find the film uploaded courtesy of me. So you can enjoy that.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. After that, Blackula with Sean Pryor. That's going to be a blast. I have yet to see that movie myself, but I've always heard good things actually about Blackula. So very excited for that one.
Absolutely. I've wanted to see that for like over a decade now, and I just haven't gotten around to it. So thanks to Sean for like suggesting that we bring that to the podcast. I cannot wait to watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2. What is your personal history with this film?
Really nothing at all. Like, I've really enjoyed the Heisei movies that we've watched so far for the podcast, which include Godzilla versus Biollante, Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, Return of Godzilla from 1984. I think that's the first one of the Heisei era. And I think I'm missing one, too, that we've talked about.
Yeah, last year we watched Godzilla versus Mothra.
Right, yeah. And I really like all those. Godzilla versus King Ghidorah especially is amazing. Like, definitely in my top five Godzilla movies that I've ever seen. So I had, you know, high hopes for Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2, but didn't really know anything about it.
I came to this one later in the game, just a few years ago. I acquired it on DVD. It's actually available for free on YouTube with ads. A lot of these 90s movies got Columbia TriStar acquired the rights to for like US distribution. So you can find those one like this, sorry, Mechagodzilla 2 and Godzilla 2000. I don't know, but they're on YouTube for free with ads. So as a teacher, I'd have some downtime. I might throw this one up on the screen for the students. But with that said, I've never really like sat down and just watched it. So it was a real treat to do that for this recording.
The bionic monster, a menacing giant, an awesome machine, unleashed with a deadly task. Godzilla, the only hope for Earth's survival. Godzilla versus the bionic monster. Godzilla strives to win supremacy in a fight to the end. Will Godzilla triumph? The Earth survive? Godzilla versus the bionic monster, an earth-shaking movie, rated G. The bionic monster, now unleashed with a deadly task. Never before have Godzilla's mighty powers been so challenged. Godzilla versus the bionic monster, rated G.
King Kong. Mammoth. Behemoth. Goliath. King Kong escapes and meets his greatest foe, the Kong of Steel. A gargantuan duel unmatched by any battle in history. thundering 60-foot robot Kong of Steel, creation of the evil Dr. Who, criminal genius who stops at nothing.
Kong, once again, dig!
For life against the Copter Squadron. A thousand thrills as King Kong battles the Serpent of Mondo Island.
Not his Kong!
Hits himself against the nation's armament. And plunges a beautiful girl into a world of terror. King Kong in a duel to the death.
Godzilla, champion and defender of Earth in The Terror of Godzilla.
Titanosaurus, Mechagodzilla, destroy them.
He holds the front line of battle, while in their spaceships, aliens command a deadly duel. Will the powerful serpent Titanosaurus' cyclone tail and the robot monster Mechagodzilla's lethal rays destroy Earth? See this ultimate test of power, The Terror of Godzilla, rated G.
The director of Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2 is Takao Okawata. He started his career at Toho in the 1970s, worked with Akira Kurosawa and Ishiro Honda as assistant director on Kagemusha, the Akira Kurosawa movie. He was the chief assistant director on Return of Godzilla from 1984 and directed Godzilla vs. Mothra. He would go on to direct Godzilla vs. Destoroyah. So Okawara also directed that, and Godzilla 2000 from 1999.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The screenplay for Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2 is by Wataru Miura, a screenwriter best known for his work on the Godzilla franchise in the 90s and 2000s. So he wrote Godzilla 2000, Godzilla vs. Megaguirus, Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla in 2002, and Godzilla Final Wars in 2004.
The film was produced by Shogo Tomiyama. The film was produced by Shogo Tomiyama. He produced most of the Heisei and Millennium Godzilla movies. Maybe I'll just mention the last couple people here on the list as well. The executive producer was Tomoyuki Tanaka, who I think was the executive producer going back to the original, right? Like,
correct.
For decades.
Yeah.
So definitely the OG Tanaka, and then another OG doing the music for Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2, Akira Ifukube. I believe this was the last film that he scored in his career.
That's possible. And Ishiro Honda had died in February of 93, right before production started on this film. So, like we said, Godzilla vs. Mothra was the last one released in his lifetime, but this movie was coming out. You know, we're losing the OGs, but we still have Fukube and Tanaka in charge, doing what they do best.
Yeah, absolutely. And the music is really incredible in this movie. I think that's responsible for a lot of its power. I do want to mention one more crew member who I think is also one of the highlights of the film, which is the visual effects director Koichi Kawakita. I believe he was the visual effects director, right? I just want to make sure and check my facts here. Yes, Koichi Kawakita. His effects work on this movie is really incredible. He, you know, he did a lot of the effects for like movies in the Heisei era, so also Godzilla vs. Biollante, Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, Godzilla vs. Mothra, a lot of the movies that we just talked about. And his work here is really phenomenal, I would say.
I agree. Yeah, I'll get to that with the good, but
yeah,
phenomenal work. The select cast that we're going to mention are kind of our three lead roles. We have Masahiro Takashima. He plays Kazuma. Kazuma is an eager, friendly pilot and self-described pteranodon enthusiast. He's kind of a nerd, but he's recruited into G-Force, which is the force tasked with eliminating Godzilla. And he's called into service with G-Force after his Garuda weapon is scrapped. And that weapon is like a giant flying laser cannon that ultimately affixes itself to the back of Mechagodzilla to give Mechagodzilla some extra ammo because it needed that.
To create Super Mechagodzilla.
Yes.
Which is what it's called in the movie. It's so cool. It's so fun. The Garuda thing that Kazuma flies, it's kind of like a TIE fighter in Star Wars, right? It reminded me of that.
Yep. And there's a scene where he's piloting the craft and he gets knocked by one of Rodan's beams and he's spinning around inside the cockpit,
mm-hmm.
which was very reminiscent of TIE fighters in Star Wars.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. It really is so fun.
Yeah.
The movie also stars Ryoko Sano as Azusa. She's a scientist who watches over the Godzillasaurus egg when it hatches. So that Godzillasaurus egg, you know, some scientists discover on an island and bring it back to Kyoto. And she's the scientist that cares for the baby Godzilla that hatches from that egg.
That's right. Is it Minya or is it baby Godzilla?
Better than Minya, in my opinion. I prefer baby. I'm baby all the way.
Yeah. I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah.
The director thought so anyways. He wasn't a fan of those older Son of Godzilla movies.
Yeah, he and I agree on that for sure. And, you know, yeah, the treatment of baby Godzilla in this movie is pretty good. It's one of many things I think is an improvement on like the kind of like goofy, you know, what's the word? Family-friendly tone of some of those Son of Godzilla era movies, you know?
Right. So they're taking a concept from the 60s that they treated relatively comically, but now they're treating it seriously. What would this be like if we did that? So I agree. I appreciate that take on ostensibly silly characters.
Yeah, totally. That's a good way to put it.
Megumi Odaka returns. She plays Miki, a psychic with a connection to Godzilla. Miki first featured in Godzilla vs. Biollante and in each subsequent Heisei film. This actually is a record for the most recurring human character in the Godzilla franchise. So she's a welcomed presence. She's doing her psychic thing, which is a little, dare I say, campy at times. Maybe a little plot shortcut at times.
Yeah. I do enjoy that element, though. I really liked it in Biollante as well, and I think it works pretty well here. I like the character, and I like some of the sort of more emotional moments that her presence provides in the movie. Also, I don't want to sound shallow, but she's really adorable, and she has these like ears that stick out a lot, and they're just so cute. I love her presence in this movie so much.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but I was like, she's the one with the big ears.
Which, I mean, that's a good look. I'm not.
Nothing against big-eared people out there.
Yeah.
Mine are drooping with my age.
I feel like my ears are kind of big, but I've like grown into them over the years or something. I don't know.
We got the production backstory of this film. It was intended to be the last of the Heisei films, but I feel like I've read that about every single one of these up until this point. But that being the case, Toho didn't want to compete with TriStar, who had put into production their own Hollywood-produced Godzilla film, which would eventually become Godzilla from 1998. So Toho is like, all right, we'll cool our jets after this film. They also wanted to honor the passing of Ishiro Honda earlier that year with this final film. This next note is crazy. You want to read this?
Yeah, sure. Tanaka's first idea was to redo King Kong versus Godzilla or have Godzilla fight Mechanikong from King Kong Escapes. But maybe not surprisingly, the licensing for any Kong appearance in this movie from Universal Pictures was extremely expensive, prohibitively so. Another idea had Mechanikong injecting Godzilla with G-Force soldiers who would bring Godzilla down from inside his own body. Which, yeah, your note here is what could have been. That would have been really crazy. It's sort of like Inner Space meets Godzilla a little bit.
Yeah. Fantastic Voyage is a movie that
yeah.
with a similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, can you imagine? Like, we're inside Godzilla.
Weird. I wish, I like this movie a lot, but I kind of wish they had used that concept maybe for a future movie, because I'm sure they never actually used that concept, right?
Agreed, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, there's still time. I hope they do someday.
That's just so out there. Like, that is so, so sci-fi. I would watch the hell out of it over and over and over again.
Yeah, it would be so surreal. I can picture just like how crazy it would look right now in my head, you know?
And then they come across Godzilla's brain that's in his butt.
Yeah. Which the military, the G-Force or whatever, they come up with something called the G-Charger to like hit that second brain in his butt. And it's like, you know, if you have an immature sense of humor, just like the ideas that come to mind through that are pretty ridiculous. Like when they called it Operation G-Charger, I think. And like, you can cut this part out of the episode if you want. But like, before they said that, in my head, I was like, is it called Operation Anal Probe? Because that seems like that's what it's going to be, you know?
Look, Mechagodzilla has one thing on its mind. Just got to get to the brain. Butt brain.
Yeah, the butt brain. I love it. That's a pretty ridiculous sci-fi concept in itself.
That is true. Yeah. So, why Mechagodzilla? Well, based on the success of reintroducing King Ghidorah and Mothra in previous films, Tanaka and Tomiyama decided to bring back another classic foe from the Showa era. Now, Matt, we talked about Terror of Mechagodzilla once on this show. I really like that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think you do too.
Yeah.
But I think we differ on the original Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, I think that's the one I didn't like all that much. Terror of Mechagodzilla is the one with the aliens with the really cool outfits, right? I forget what they're called.
Yeah, the ones who are like the leader. There's one bizarre scene, speaking about like risque innuendo. The leader is like whipping his minions with a cat of nine tails or something.
Really, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, I like that moment.
And what are we talking about on this show?
This is a PG-13 episode. But I think that was from Terror of Mechagodzilla, not Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, which, yeah, to be honest, I barely remember, but I don't think I liked it very much.
Okay. Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla has the aliens that are apes, and when they get killed, they revert to their ape form.
Right. I do remember that.
That's like the really far out sci-fi in that movie.
I like that ape stuff, but I think the rest of it, like even the Godzilla stuff, I didn't like too much in that movie. But you know, I guess maybe one downfall of this podcast is just like we've watched so many Godzilla movies. Some of them do kind of blur together a little bit after a while.
Oh, for sure. Well, we haven't featured that first Mechagodzilla film yet on the show.
Mm.
So one day we will, and we'll be able to pay more attention to it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice.
But I am happy that Mechagodzilla was back for this one, which I'm sure we'll talk about pretty soon here, is just like the special effects and like the appearance of this thing is very, very cool. I mean, like for anybody that loves Transformers or like, you know, we've talked about some of these podcasts recently, like Robot Jocks, for example. There's a lot of just like little boy fun to be had with the design of Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, it's pure mecha. And, you know, I wish I had Sean Childers on the show here.
Yeah.
Have his take on it. But yeah, it's a really great blend of traditional kaiju with that Japanese love of giant robots.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's probably a good segue to the next point here, which I can talk about a little bit. There was more CGI on Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2 than on the previous Godzilla films. The Godzilla suit was new. Mechagodzilla was less angular than the previous incarnation. And there was no suitmation for Rodan. It was mostly puppets and marionettes. And all of it looks pretty great, in my opinion.
Agreed. I love Rodan, how that creature is brought to life in this film. Because the Showa Rodan, the first film from 1956, I think the special effects still hold up. But in the later films, you could see wear and tear on the suit.
It's starting to look a little ragged. And it is just suitmation. It's a man in the suit in the 60s. So to see the monster brought to life with updated effects and techniques, I think is very interesting, very cool.
Yeah, for sure. And the first appearance of Rodan in this movie, I'm kind of working in some of my good stuff a little bit early in the episode, but it's a really incredible moment. Like, they find the egg on this island and they're like, they don't really know exactly what it is, but they think maybe it's a Rodan egg at that point, although that turns out not to be the case. But then shortly after that, we see Rodan's first appearance, and it's this like wide shot, and the clouds are kind of like, it's very cloudy and dark and kind of ominous. And we just see Rodan like soaring through the sky in the distance, and like Akira Ifukube's score is just like very, also very ominous and like atmospheric and evocative. It's an incredible moment. I love that shot in the movie.
I agree. And I love the shots of Rodan flying over Japan in the daytime. And you see you have Rodan's enormous shadow soaring over buildings and people. And then just like the effects of, you know, matte or composite photography and all these techniques working really seamlessly with a puppet. Can I see a string or two, maybe, if I look hard enough? But it doesn't matter. Like, the magic of the movie just transcends any of those little bits of, you know, quibbles you might have.
Totally agree. Yeah, the couple wires that you see are infinitely better than like the, you know, CGI overload that you would see probably like 10 years after this, you know?
Yeah, not long. Yeah. And CGI was used a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
I did notice it, but it never distracted me.
Yeah, it always seems like an add-on to like the practical effects work, you know?
Yeah, really great blend, which I think is the best way to use these things.
For sure.
Oh, so going back to Minya, or Baby Godzilla, this character was updated and included to appeal to female audiences, who were a big reason why Godzilla vs. Mothra was so successful in 1992. However, director Okawara felt about the original Baby or Son of Godzilla movies, that's the producer's job to say, look, we need butts in seats, women see movies too. Let's include cute dinosaurs. I don't know if that's like any of that's politically correct, but that be that as it may.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that for sure. But yeah, I like the appearance of, like I was saying before, I like the appearance of Baby Godzilla in this movie a lot more than Minya back in the day. I read that like the design of Baby Godzilla was meant to be like a lot more dinosaur like than Minya was in Son of Godzilla. And I think you can tell that it's like, it is cute and like kind of goofy, but like it also makes some kind of logical sense that it would be like a Godzillasaurus that's like not Godzilla, but like part of the same family tree or whatever, you know? It all kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad it looks like it could be a real animal.
Yeah.
As opposed to Minya, which is just like, what are we doing? This doesn't look like Godzilla.
Right. Exactly. And then it just gets, I mean, I'm okay with silliness, but it's like preposterous in that movie.
Yeah.
It goes off the deep end. Yeah.
In terms of the dubbing, I'm not going to get too in the weeds, but Toho had a Hong Kong company issue an English dub for the international release. TriStar, like I said earlier, released the film on home video in the United States in 1999 with a new English dub. I believe this is the version I watched anyways. My box set of these movies is like released through TriStar. I would love to see this movie in the original Japanese. That option was not available to me on my DVD. I just get this 99 dub, which I don't think was like a great dubbing. For instance, everyone pronounced Rodan as Radon, which is how it's spelled in the original Japanese. But we all know, at least in English, that's not how you say the creature's name.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about it. I just want the original language.
Right. I did watch it in the original Japanese. I streamed it on Prime, which I don't always love using Prime, but like their availability is really great on there. And I think it was the TriStar release, but it was the like the original Japanese version of it. And I'd like to see the dubbed one at some point too, but the original sounded great, and I'm glad they had that on there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
For sure.
Release and legacy of this movie. It was released in December of 93. The Japanese title is simply Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, which I find fascinating that it's the Americans who added a 2 to this movie.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that most American audiences really remembered the first one very well. Strange.
Because it's not a sequel to that movie.
Right. Yeah, they could have just come up with a totally new name. I don't know what it would have been, but like, if there were issues of like confusion or whatever, they could have just named it something else. But
and poor yeah. Terror of Mechagodzilla, which is number 2.
Right, that is a sequel to it, yeah. Man, it's confusing. It's hard work being a kaiju super fan.
You're like a detective. You gotta sift through languages and media. Is it this dub or that sub? Is it the Japanese? Is it the Hong Kong? What? We gotta figure it out.
Yeah, what's going on here, man? So the film got mostly positive reviews when it came out, especially for its special effects and action sequences. It was followed by Godzilla versus Space Godzilla. By the way, Space Godzilla is heavily rumored to be the antagonist of the upcoming Godzilla X Kong Supernova. I actually don't know Space Godzilla very well. I don't think I've ever seen him before.
He was only in one movie, Godzilla versus Space Godzilla, from 1994. And we'll get to it probably next year, I think.
Yeah. Let's keep going with the Heisei era. I love everything we've seen so far.
Yeah, and like I said, we've gone in order, which I think is great because these movies do have an order.
Yeah.
You're going to see, just a slight spoiler, you're going to see Baby Godzilla grow up a little bit.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I read that was one of the original endings of this movie, that Godzilla was originally maybe going to die, but then Baby Godzilla would like suddenly grow from Godzilla's energy into like the new Godzilla. It's probably good they didn't have that ending in this movie, but that would have been kind of crazy to see.
Well, maybe they use it for a future movie. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm excited. You're tantalizing me right now.
Well, on that tantalizing note, Camp Kaiju is brought to you by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Whether you're looking for your dream home, a savvy investment property, or expert guidance in home rehab and flipping, the Zach Pack has you covered. Check the link in the show notes for more information. Matt, what's in Mina's mailbox? Brought to you by patreon.com/campkaiju.
Oh, just had to get a glass of water. My apologies. What is in Mina's mailbox? Let's find out.
Is it a Godzillasaurus?
Oh, it is not. That would be so adorable, though. I wish it was. We could play around in this like little pen, you know, and like sing it songs and everything. That'd be great. But it is not that. It is a comment from Don, superfan Don, via Patreon. Don has a comment about the giant spider invasion. He says, "This was quite an interesting film, but I knew I was going to have fun. A few seconds after the opening credits, there he is, Alan Hale himself, and the first words out of his mouth are, 'Hi, little buddy, how can you not love that?' When they mentioned the Neutron Initiator, all I could think of was reverse the polarity in the neutron flow from Doctor Who. But a lot of people wouldn't get that reference." Definitely an... I don't get that reference, I'm sorry to say. Don goes on to say, "Definitely an enjoyable movie. I'm curious what the updated anniversary version will be like. I hope one or both of you guys were able to see it and tell us about it." Thank you, Don. Yeah, I definitely still am kind of like keeping an ear out about the new footage for the giant spider invasion. I don't know if there are any screenings coming around here, not that I've heard of so far, but I'm intrigued.
Me too. Bill Rabane, if you're listening, I hope you enjoyed my Christmas card. Keep us updated, please. We hope to hang out properly and see your movie in person.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. We just have one more little comment. This is from Big Texas Butters on Instagram, which just props to that name. It's the best. Big Texas Butters comments about Gappa, the Triphibian monster. They say, "Just finished listening yesterday. Great episode. Love that movie when I stumbled upon it years ago." And that was kind of my experience. Saw it on Tubi. I stumbled upon it. I threw it on. I ended up really liking it. Not so much on
follow-up watches.
If I had seen it back in the day, I probably would have some like nostalgia value for it. I'm sorry to say that I do not have that for that movie.
We have a lot of comments about GAPA. I will just say we have so many more to come. Real hot and cold. Like some people really love it. Some people can leave it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I don't hate the movie, but I'm not gaga for GAPA either.
I hope that's the name of the official fan club, Gaga for GAPA. It's great.
Thank you, Big Texas Butters. Thank you, Don. Thank you, all of our Patreon supporters. Thank you, all of our listeners here, near, and everywhere. Keep them coming. You really add a lot to the show with what you comment and want to talk about. We did have some questions about Peter Lorre. Is he coming back? Where is he? His honeymoon? Well, let me tell you, he's coming back. He came back last week. He dropped by my place, picked up his things. He's out the door, Matt.
Oh, man.
He's moving in with Lenore, who was a raven who transformed into a beautiful woman, I'm told. And they went off. They got married. Don't know if, you know, what's next for that those two lovebirds, but Peter and Lenore are living on their own now.
Good for them. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Still honeymooning. Maybe they're traveling the world.
But I told him he can work remote. So yes, he could be anywhere in the world.
Wow.
He's a free man.
Yeah. His next recording could be from, you know, who knows where? The jungles of Borneo. Let's go with that.
He's going to be reviewing that Shemp Howard picture called Crazy Nights from 1944. About three cracked-brained clowns trapped in a haunted house with runaway gorillas, ghosts, and more.
Wow. Three goofballs run up against ghosts and a giant gorilla in a haunted house is the official synopsis here. I love that. Goofballs.
Yeah, not stooges. There's just one stooge, two goofballs.
Man, I can't wait to hear Peter talk about that. It sounds amazing.
Same. From live from the jungles of Borneo.
Yeah. Man, I don't know where that came from.
You know I'm going to use that now.
You know, I would be honored if you do.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood. Oh, here the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we, you and me, yes, we will watch the best of the worst. Movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances. But with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and evil bats to keep you up at night. This is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Live from the jungles of Borneo, it is I, your host, Peter Lorre. I present to you a little 1944 picture that is so memorable, it even has two names. Ghost Crazy, or as we will call it tonight, Crazy Nights. Either way, you would have to be as crazy as I to watch and review these haunted houses. This haunted house movie that has more boos than the booing crowd in Young Frankenstein. Yes, you remember the picture well. Well, either way, forgive the forced pun. I'm working remotely here in my tropical mountain cottage, and oh, the bats are flying by here in the twilight. Oh, yes, I am quite enjoying the afterlife these days. Taking it a little easier. Watching my movies. Poverty Row movies. Eating my fish heads. Oh, yes, it's all at my leisure. And Lenore, she's up to something in the back. I she kind of does her own thing these days. But that's all right with me. We have a healthy balance. Anyways, Crazy Nights is a 63-minute monogram film that will challenge your funny bones in all the wrong ways. Shemp Howard leads this film as a circus performer whose act is to imitate a gorilla for is to imitate the gorilla for unwitting customers. His partners in the ring include Billy Gilbert and Maxie Rosenbloom. The three complete a trio of unholy slapstick that reeks as a Three Stooges knockoff, despite, of course, Shemp's status as a stooge himself. Now, Billy Gilbert is interesting. He was well known for his long career as a Hollywood funny man. And while he comes off in this picture as an unfunny Lou Costello, you could see that maybe there was something there, and this maybe just wasn't the vehicle for him. Yes, well, you've seen it all before, folks. Crazy Nights is an episode of Scooby-Doo with mistaken identities, jilted lovers, and a pesky poltergeist that turns out to be the disgruntled handyman. Spoilers, if you care about that kind of thing. So now, what does this picture have going for it? Well, perhaps the junior high antics may be stupid enough at times to elicit a chuckle here or there. The last 10 minutes, for instance, is a revolving door farce involving Shemp in his gorilla costume and a genuine gorilla, which of course is played by ape actor Art Miles. But you know, overall, skip this one, folks. It is a comedy with gags deader than old Peter Lorre himself. But next week, have I got the treat for you. A 1945 little picture called Fog Island, yes, with venerable horror stars Lionel Atwill and George Zucco. Yes, yes, let us relish in the thick mist of the poverty row.
Hello, Kaiju Campers. Just wanted to give you a little postscript. I would be amiss not to mention the passing of Bob Burns, who passed away on December 12th, 2025. Bob Burns was a noted legendary archivist, collector, monster movie enthusiast. He was an actor in his time, a producer, a director. He made connections with Hollywood celebrities, with regular old monster kids like you and me. He made the festival rounds. He provided scores of audio commentaries. If you have any classic monster movies on DVD, go check them out. You might have a Bob Burns commentary on there. When you have a moment, just look up Bob Burns and keep him in mind. All right. Until then, you stay campy. And Mr. Burns, you rip in peace.
Monster of is a skyscraper. When he moves, the whole earth quivers and quakes, and an abyss of horror opens up. See these prehistoric beasts emerge from the bowels of the earth after 200 million years to devastate mankind. Supersonic jets cannot catch him. Rockets cannot stop him. Armored tanks are helpless before him. Even guided missiles are powerless. See Rodan destroy a modern city, leveling it to the earth with a killing airstream of his mighty wings. Nothing can stop him. Nothing escapes this monstrous beast of evil. The mightiest monster the world has ever known. The mightiest egg the world has ever known.
Introducing me, Son of Godzilla. The fantastic red water, one of the many weird natural phenomena on mysterious Sorgel Island. A great scientific experiment begins.
Try another frequency. What is it? It seems as though something's jamming the wavelengths.
Son of Godzilla, a rollicking monster spectacular. See how a baby monster becomes a monstrous monster.
All right. I honestly couldn't think of a ton of deep themes in this movie. One thing that did stand out to me, though, was the character of Kazuma. Is that right? Azusa. And she is having like an impassioned speech to some government political figure. And she makes the point that baby Godzilla is not to be used as a commodity because they want to use baby Godzilla as bait to lure Godzilla away from Japan. And she says it is a living being worthy of life, not to be used again as a pawn. So that's all I got out of this movie.
I think you're right about that. I think there are some kind of like tangential themes that go along with that a little bit. You know, like Azusa definitely does. That's her name, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know you just said it. She has, you were kind of alluding to the questionable like gender stereotypes of that the producers brought to it. Like, you know, women love cute little dinosaurs, so like we got to put the cute little dinosaur in the movie. But like, I think the sort of motherly relationship that Azusa has with baby Godzilla is pretty touching. And, you know, it's almost like surrogate family that's created between those two characters and then also Kazuma, who has this kind of like romance with Azusa, you know, and they basically end up together at the end of the movie. It's strongly implied. And I don't want to give away what happens with baby Godzilla, but it's, you know, also I think we have a parallel kind of surrogate family with Godzilla, Rodan, and baby Godzilla. They're not like literally parents and children, but like, you know, Godzilla definitely brings some like fatherly affection towards baby Godzilla. And then Rodan is kind of a protector of both of them. Like Rodan makes this very touching sacrifice to bring Godzilla back to life when we think he's defeated in battle. So, you know, I think there are some themes of family. It's like a very broad theme and kind of sentimental, but pretty touching, I would say, in this movie. But the second theme that I would mention, I thought was even more interesting. Like you mentioned how Azusa says that baby Godzilla is not a commodity and should not be treated as such by the government or, you know, G-Force or whatever. And then at the very end of the movie, there's another speech about how, you know, Mechagodzilla is vanquished by Godzilla and Rodan. And there's another line about how, like, you know, life will conquer over artificial things, whether it's like reptiles or humans, like they will take down hunks of metal, basically, you know? And I love that. Like Mechagodzilla is in the title of the movie, but like, you know, it's kind of a happy ending that Mechagodzilla does not win in the end. And I couldn't help but think about artificial intelligence a little bit, you know? Like true creativity, true life, and true human presence will always conquer artificial intelligence, you know? In my opinion, that's my sort of old-fashioned way of looking at it.
No, that's wonderful. More people need to think like you. And that's that. See, that's great because you're making me think more critically about these themes, the familial relationships, particularly between the monsters. I love, and I did note on that connection they share as kaiju. It's kind of like, look, we have to look out for each other as these irradiated things in nature that shouldn't exist, but here we are. Second, yeah, to your point about that line, nature will, or life will always conquer the machines, paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think that's the difference between this movie and Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, the first one. Whereas Mechagodzilla in that movie is a tool of an alien invading force. So it's a little more pulpy in that regard, maybe a little less deep, but making the mecha a tool of humanity, now we're making it a little more personal thematically. Now it's like, okay, what does this say about our human struggle against nature? You know, liken it to stopping a hurricane, which, you know, Godzilla and these kaiju are forces of nature. Can you really stop an earthquake? Can you stop a volcano? You could try, but ultimately you can't. You can't do it. And I think that that's the analogy in this movie that makes it a little more deeper than previous Mechagodzilla movies.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I think like there are sequences in this movie where you feel bad for Godzilla. He's being totally pummeled by Mechagodzilla. He's getting like missiles shot into his body and then ripped out, and he's getting like electrical pulses like sent into him. And it's like, man, I know he destroys cities and presumably kills hundreds of thousands of people, but still, it's like you feel bad for Godzilla. He's just doing what he does, like you were saying, and that's like his kind of natural behavior, you know? So like, I feel like it's, I did not expect that like Godzilla triumphing and Mechagodzilla being taken down would be the happy ending of this movie, but it kind of is. And I thought of Pacific Rim a little bit too, which, you know, a very similar storyline, like governments create mechas to take down these kaiju. And in that movie, I think we are supposed to be like really happy when like, you know, these huge robots pummel these monsters and all that. And it's like, I would rather kind of have it this way around, where like the actual living thing still reigns supreme at the end, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Like if Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2, it's just a matter of perspective. This movie takes the side of the monster.
Yeah.
But you could easily flip it. And in the movie, in the world of the movie, the whole world is rooting for Mechagodzilla.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, I think that's one of many reasons these movies have such staying power and like lasting value, because we love these monsters and we kind of do want to see them win, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, this movie is like extremely entertaining. I think it kind of just like jumps into the action right away with like Mechagodzilla and this like government lair, and the effects again are really, really great. And then it just like never really lets up. I think like the climactic battle between Godzilla and Mechagodzilla maybe goes on a little bit too long, but I do think like all the kaiju battles are really beautiful and a lot of fun. And speaking of beautiful, like this is just like an extremely well shot, good looking movie. Like there were some shots where I gasped out loud. There's a shot, like you mentioned, Rodan flying over the cities, but also there's a shot where like Godzilla is like standing next to some skyscrapers, like at dusk, the sky is like a deep purple behind him. And it's gorgeous. I love that shot. And then like later on when Godzilla is resurrected by Rodan, there's just like lights and like explosions all over the screen, and it's like totally eye-popping. It's such a beautiful movie.
Can I add on to that? There's a scene where Rodan is on the ground, like he's been pummeled, and Godzilla is walking up to him, and it's just the frame is Rodan's face, and in the background approaching is just the legs of destruction of Godzilla.
Yeah.
You know, it's just framing like that that's so intriguing. You know, it just makes you lean in closer to the screen.
Absolutely, yeah. And there are definitely some examples of that in the older Showa era movies, but I really like these Heisei movies a lot, because like I just feel like the visual creativity kind of takes a step forward, and the special effects and the things they can do with that obviously allow that to happen a little bit, but it's like very impressive for sure.
I remembered what I was going to say before. Whatever the reasons for female inclusion in this movie, the fact is that two of our three leads are women. And I realize that now in the midst of our conversation. So I just want to shout that out. Like we have I think strong female representation. They're scientists, they're women with, you know, even if the men are pushing back against them, they are still strong-willed women. And the man in the trio, he's a nerd. Like I'm saying, like he's not a threatening masculine meathead. He's like a nice guy who's there to support them as well. So I think there's like, to use the term, there's like a really feminine energy with this trio.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I love that. And like, yeah, the two female leads that you were just talking about are like extremely capable scientists who are like have so much agency. Like Azusa at the end gets into a shipping container with baby Godzilla, like, and like she's risking her life to like comfort this creature, you know, who she's developed this bond with. And like, you know, like that's a heroic thing to do. And then Miki, I think that's her name, right? The psychic character.
Yeah.
You know, she's the one who like knows where Godzilla's second brain is and like has, you know, certain qualms, certain reservations about like being used to attack Godzilla, but she still goes along with it. So anyway, she's a complicated character. And I feel like, you know, the Bechdel test, which is like a test about like the agency of female characters. Do they operate independently of male characters and so on and so forth? I think the characters in this movie pass that test, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think you can go on about that. You know, Godzilla at the end of this movie shows a parental instinct towards baby Godzilla. And I know we, you know, the world just refers to Godzilla as a he, but we, you know, we don't truly know that. And I think Godzilla can be, well, here's my thesis. Men can also be motherly. How about that?
I love that thesis. Yeah, for sure. And I like what you said about the feminine energy in this movie. And honestly, I think that's one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think Rodan is a female. I don't know why. They refer to the monster as a he, but in the first movie, like the first Rodan film, we have a mother and a father.
Mm.
And there's just something about Rodan that, I don't know, strikes me as a female character, like Mothra does.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Protector, that kind of thing, you know? Yeah. Right.
Caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
But men can be that too, and we should be.
Absolutely.
All right, what else do you like about this movie?
You know, I do like that theme that kind of comes in at the end about life conquering artificiality, that whole thing. Mm. The Ifukube music is really phenomenal. Like, I love all of his soundtracks, but this might be one of his best. And there are so many moments that just are lent so much power and almost melancholy through his music. So yeah, that's really great. Yeah, that's the main stuff for me, I think.
Same. All those things. His score blows me away. In the beginning, like you said, when we're getting just shots of Mechagodzilla being built, but also we see King Ghidorah's head, the Mecha King Ghidorah. It's just taking me back to one of my favorite movies, and I'm feeling really pumped. I love the special effects. But I can't put into words how effective, how good, how mind-boggling intricate these special effects are, with like the blinking eyes when baby Godzilla, like the close-ups, because the effects are so good, they allow close-ups of baby Godzilla, of Rodan, of Godzilla. And I'm not distracted at all by the suit, by the artificiality. Like, it's so lifelike, and the animatronics were being used, but man, it's good. Like, there's life in those eyes.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it, absolutely. And like, yeah, the special effects are really dynamic. Like, there are some shots that are like from the point of view of some of the creatures, or even from like Garuda, I think is the name of like the flying ship, you know, yeah. And there are these great aerial shots that are like from the perspective of that ship. So there's just so much energy and creativity in the special effects in this movie.
Yeah, I think it's the reason to watch this movie.
Yeah, the number one reason for sure, but I was surprised by how many other things the movie has to offer as well.
Yeah. My favorite part were when Godzilla and Mechagodzilla shoot their beams at each other, and you get a classic like tug of war thing with the beams.
Yeah.
So good.
Amazing moment. I love that. Yeah. That whole fight at the end, maybe slightly too long, but there's so much good stuff in that.
Yeah. Oh, and the brutality of Rodan's death.
Yeah.
He's got a hole in his chest. He's gurgling bile.
Yeah, and just like he or she sacrifices themselves for Godzilla. That's amazing, you know? Like, it's a touching moment.
That heartbreak, not as effective as Honda's Rodan from 56, but I think Rodan in these two movies, it just, there's so much sympathy. the end of Rodan, the movie, breaks my heart every time I think about it. When they die in the volcano crater.
Yes. I know I love Rodan, but it's been a while since I've seen it, so I don't remember it all that well, but that is ringing a bell.
Yeah. The Honda touch.
Yeah. Can I mention one more good thing? Sorry, yeah. I'm spending a lot of time on the good stuff, but like maybe my favorite instance of Ifukube's music in this movie is when there's like a song that Baby Godzilla knows somehow from like the island that the egg was hatched. And like the first time we hear that song, it's kind of very eerie. And then that causes Baby Godzilla to hatch from the egg. And then the second time we hear it is when a bunch of young girls who are like go to that like telekinesis school that Miki teaches at, they go to like Baby Godzilla's pen and they all sing that song, and they're like all like very adorable like school children, but they sing this ominous, eerie, spooky song, and then Baby Godzilla kind of is very frightened and goes haywire, you know. Both of those scenes I really love. The music is great, and just like the what's going on narratively is like really interesting as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of bold choices in this movie.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, I have some things that weren't working for me with some of these things. Like, I love the whole psychic angle, and they go to the school just as they did in Biollante, but here it felt more like a shortcut, like a narrative plot device. It didn't quite feel as organic to me. And this is my main takeaway. Like, I love this movie's effects and the score and the visuals, but I still am not clear on what people really want, their relationships. There's like a lot of character stuff that I was lost. I was like, I have lost the plot. I don't quite understand. And then at one point someone says Rodan is the half-brother of Baby Godzilla.
Yeah.
I literally threw my notes. I was like, what? When did that happen? I don't understand. Backtrack. Hold up. What's going on? So it's like things like that. The script throws nuggets, but doesn't back them up, really.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah. I think like the movie moves so fast and there are so many like delightful scenes and moments that like maybe it's just assuming that we won't really care about that stuff, you know? And that did kind of work on me a little bit. Like I like, you know, also with the half brother thing, I was like, wait a minute, what the hell is going on here? But then like some other awesome thing happened in the movie and I was like, who cares? I'll just keep on watching this. But yeah, the script definitely seems like it's like cobbled together a little bit. You know, and some of the... Oh, sorry.
Sorry, no, I, to be fair, I did have to look it up. And there's a Reddit thread. I looked it up. Like, what's going on? Why are they related to each other? And they're not really related to each other. It's like the whole cuckoo bird thing, which was mentioned in the beginning of the film, to be fair, where this was always a Godzillasaurus egg that ended up in Rodan's nest. These two were hatched in the same nest, which is why Rodan views Baby Godzilla as his brother. But where's the other Rodans? How did this egg get into a Rodan nest? I would like a little bit of fleshing out of these ideas.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And maybe some of it is like, assuming that we know what happened in the previous movies, like it doesn't really explain Miki very much. So if you don't know who that is from Biollante, then that might be an issue. And then like I think the island that they're on where they discover the egg was also in Godzilla versus Mothra, right? Even though I don't remember that very well.
Maybe.
That's what I read.
It's like, is that a Mothra egg, which is, we know, is an established conceit in the franchise.
Yeah.
So like, but that was also like a confusion for me. I'm like, what are we getting?
Right. Yeah. And like, I don't think it's a great thing if it's like overly serialized like that, you know, like previous Godzilla movies. It helps if you like see them in succession and like know what else is going on, but you don't absolutely have to, you know. With this movie, I think it makes even less sense if you haven't seen the other previous movies.
Yeah, but there's so much eye candy, and I mean that with all due respect. Like, it's a beautifully looking movie.
Yeah.
One more thing I'll add that detracted me from the beauty of the visuals. During the final fight,
between Godzilla and Mechagodzilla. Godzilla's crashing down, buildings are crashing down, things are blowing up. There's a lot of explosions, and the camera is shaking itself. Like, the camera is shaking wildly. I believe it's a choice to enhance the effect of quaking destruction, but I found it very distracting when so much of the rest of the battles is just a still camera, and now they made this choice and it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did. Absolutely. Yeah. It didn't really work for me either. It's relatively brief, so I guess I didn't mind it all that much. But yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, the moment would be even more impressive if there was just like a great steady composition of it, you know?
Yeah, let the scene just speak for itself. You don't need to embellish it in that way.
Yeah, totally. I would agree with that. Yeah. And I, you know, yeah, the fight scene at the end, that's like, there's so much I love about it, like I said, but it does go on for a while. And it's maybe a little bit repetitive of the first fight that Godzilla and Mechagodzilla have in the movie too, because that earlier fight, they're like shooting the beams at each other. You know, we see like the thing that opens out of like Mechagodzilla's chest to like shoot that energy wave or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit repetitive, and maybe some of those things could have been like saved for the climactic fight, and the earlier one could have been a little bit shorter. So yeah, that I would put that in the bad category. It's a relatively mild flaw, though, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those are my big things with my big critiques. I mean, maybe the first act is a little slow to get off the ground. It's not boring, but it's also just like taking its time in a way that, I don't know, for a Godzilla movie, I'd like it to get on with it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like the scene on the island early on is great, but then after that, we spend kind of a lot of time with Kazuma and Azusa and their kind of like growing relationship. And some of that's pretty charming, but it goes on for a while.
The baby Godzilla stuff, all important for the story. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just my frame of mind at the time.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I do love a lot of that stuff, though. Like the scene where like Kazuma has his little like Pteranodon flyer, like the hovercraft or whatever. Yeah. And like he and Azusa go for a ride on there, and like baby Godzilla is like planting its pen below. It's such a magical scene. It's very whimsical, like very joyous, you know. Yesterday was a bad day for a lot of the reasons that we were talking about earlier in the episode. And like then this movie and that scene kind of lifted my spirits. So I like a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, campy stuff. How can I forget? Not time for our ratings.
Right.
One thing that comes to my mind, when Azusa gets in the shipping container with baby Godzilla, I had to laugh at how willingly everyone was like, sure, that's a good idea. Get inside this thing and we're going to take you by a helicopter across the damn country. And then... Oh, Rodan attacks. Like, who thought this would be a good idea? Why did they let her in that thing?
Right. I think you even see one character, like, start to protest a little bit, and then another guy, like Azusa's boss, is like, no, let her do it. It's like, why? Why would you let her do that?
That's shady. I'm like, look, I know she's a pain in your butt, but, you know.
Yeah, just for, like, insurance reasons, like, you probably should not do that, you know? Probably should not let that happen.
Yeah.
So I think this was even more pronounced because I watched the Japanese language version. But the one American actor who plays, like, he's on the G-Force, like, board of scientists or whatever, and I don't really understand why. But, like, he's... I'm sorry to that actor whose name I think is Leo. Sorry. I do want to find out his name real quick. One moment. Leo Meneghetti is the name of the actor. He plays Dr. Leo Asimov. And he's right. Yeah, ridiculous name. But he's not a good actor. I mean, like, his line readings are ridiculous, and like it's just even more pronounced if you like hear all this dialogue in Japanese, and then you hear like some really ridiculous English dialogue that's like, maybe we can flip Mechagodzilla over or something like that, you know? Like, and that's an issue with a lot of the English language performances, I guess, but that character is especially ridiculous.
Are there no good
white actors in Japan? Because based on the Godzilla movies, there are not.
Right. I mean, maybe Nick Adams was the exception, you know, back in the day.
They imported him.
Oh, true. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe, like, I don't know if it's just like a language barrier with the director, but you would think that the actor would be able to like say lines like semi-coherently, you know?
They'd never do it.
No, it's terrible. But very amusing. And then on a similar note, there's like an automated voice in like the government like blast off center. And that's also in English, which I don't really understand why. But like the guy that they chose to like provide that voice is also ridiculous. And he's saying things like, insert coolant now. And like just things that probably he would not, like this voice would not be saying in the loudspeakers or whatever. And I thought all that was really entertaining too. Those are the campiest things I have.
Those are good. Those are good. Yeah, I mentioned everything else. I think the whole idea of our Kazuma being a self-described Pteranodon nerd, I'm like, that's so sweet, right? It's like, oh, look at you. Like, yeah. That entitles you to some authority? I guess it does in this instance.
Yeah, because he does whatever he wants. And like, he is like assigned to be a parking lot security guard at one point. So like, he's kind of in hot water for it, but like, he still does just whatever he wants, you know?
There's another bit where Rodan first appears and everyone's like, what's that? It's a giant bird. And I talk to the screen sometimes. I'm like, Godzilla exists in this world. Mothra exists in this world. Why are you flipping your lids over this monster? Yeah. Why are you all surprised this exists?
Right. They shouldn't really be surprised by anything anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the scientists on the island talk about Rodan. Like, they're aware of Rodan, so you would think other people would be, too.
See? That script. I've got my eye on that script.
Yeah. Logic is not its strong suit.
All right. Well, I'm ready to wrap it up. Give it a rating.
Yeah, for sure. It's good to get back into this with our first rating of 2026. As usual on Camp Kaiju, we have four ratings. Number one, it's a timeless classic. It definitely stands the test of time. Number two, there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great. It stands the test of time. Number three, it may be historically significant or just fun, but it does not stand the test of time. And our lowest rating, it is not worth revisiting. It definitely does not stand the test of time.
Man, oh man. I'm torn.
Me too. Stuck between two ratings right now.
Me too. But are they the same ratings as you?
I hope so. I don't know. I think so, but I could be wrong.
Well, why don't you go first? Maybe you can sway me.
Okay. I need a couple more seconds.
Okay.
It is an important decision.
This is the hardest decision I've ever made on this show.
I know. Usually I kind of know what I'm going to do from the start. I gotta do it. It's a timeless classic. It definitely stands the test of time.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to go with the highest. I really love these Heisei movies so far. And this movie, it's kind of repetitive at times, but that's like the biggest complaint I have about it. It's so gorgeous and creative. I love the music. You know, the plot's thin, but there's enough there to keep you going. And like there's this sudden great idea and theme introduced at the very end, but it still seems kind of organic to the rest of the movie. I really loved it. Yeah, highest rating for me.
That's beautiful. That is not, those are not the two I was waffling between.
Oh, okay.
Oh man. Do I want to be like, all right, you know what? You stuck to your guns. I'm going to stick to mine, but I'm going to have a caveat. Why not? Because we could do whatever we want on this show. I think this movie is so much fun. It is a blast. Throw it on, leave it in the background. You're going to love it to death. It's historically significant for reintroducing Baby Godzilla, and subsequent Heisei films will expand on that character. But if you watch this movie with any kind of discerning eye, and I know you did, so we have, you know, no offense.
Yeah. If you bring some intelligence to the movie, you know,
that
critical thought. Just kidding.
If you had any worth as a film critic, you would know. And I'm not talking about you, Matt.
Of course.
I think it kind of falls apart in the heart of the film with the characters and the plot elements. I think it's just a little too flimsy in that department for me to say it stands the test of time as a film, whatever that means. But as just as like entertainment, like this movie rocks. And I'll always go back to this movie because it's such an easy watch. But maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's a little too easy. Doesn't make me think too much. Sometimes I like that. I like to be challenged a little bit more.
Yeah. I probably overrated it a little bit.
You didn't.
I think perhaps you might have underrated it a little bit, though, too, you know?
See, there you go. But my goal for 2026, before this, I was like, I want to be more discerning. Because last, in the fall, you were very critical of movies that I was like, I love that. I don't care about the specifics of filmmaking. It's got a giant shark that eats teenagers. I love it.
Yeah. Jaws 2 is a good example of that. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we're going in opposite direction because I do feel like, you know, for 2026, I want to be like, you know what? This movie gives me pleasure. And I love that. Like, highest rating, you know, 5 out of 5.
Yeah, that's so great. And we need that. So if I rained on anybody's parade out there, sorry, but this movie still rocks. So 100% agree with you.
And we also need the critical eye and the appropriate criticisms. So we need both.
There you go.
Yeah.
Listeners, let us know what you think. All right. Well, coming up next, Matt, what do we got?
The Abominable Snowman from 1957, a Hammer horror release. Very excited for that one.
Me too, folks. Check out our Patreon to watch it, and we'll be in touch. Until then, stay campy. Thanks for hanging out with us, friends. Please rate and review the show and follow us on patreon.com/campkaiju for additional videos, reviews, merchandise, and more. Other ways to get in touch: campkaiju@gmail.com, campkaijupodcast.com, Instagram, and our voicemail number, 612-470-2612. Camp Kaiju is recorded in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, with Meanie's Mailbox music by Ben Cook Feltz. Thank you, friends. Until next time, stay campy. And Camp Kaiju is brought to you by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Whether you're looking for your dream home, a savvy investment property, or expert guidance in home rehab and flipping, the Zach Pack has you covered. Check the link in the show notes for more information.
What we've got is no pteranodon. This baby is something else.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die.
and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. The unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. A decent world. That will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!